What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Guardians of the Future. I'm your host, Justin Latta. Apologies for not having an episode last week. I had a bit of a migraine Monday and really just didn't want to push through it and didn't really have any plan. Wanted to let things kind of go in the first part of the season and see some storylines develop, talk about some players. And we've got plenty to talk about now in the minor league. So thanks for sticking with me. Find the show. I'll do my Lockdown Guardians spiel here. You can find the podcast wherever you get podcasts. They're free. Spotify, Apple, where most people listen, but you can get it pretty much anywhere else. I think we're on, I think we're even on iHeartRadio now, and we're all kinds of places. And of course on YouTube, and you can subscribe to the newsletter at nextyearincleveland.com, where we've got every minor league game covered, whether it is the daily recap. I've been in a captain's game recently. Matthew Cannell was at a captain's game in Fort Wayne. We've got that covered. I've got an interview with Alex Mooney today that I got on Friday from the captain's game that I will play for a little bit for you. I'm going to leave some of it for the website later in the week. I'm transcribing right now. It should be fun. I'm also scheduled to talk to Guardians Director of Player Development, Rob Serfolio, this Wednesday. So I'm hoping to have some audio for that for next week as well. I really appreciate him taking the time to talk to me this coming week as well. But for this week, it's just me and you, and it's just some highlights from the Guardians minor league system in the start of the season so far. And at the back half, I will play you a portion of my interview with Alex Mooney from the Captains on Friday. So let's start with the Lynchburg Hillcats. My goodness. I know the first part of the season was not pretty for the Hillcats. Let's be honest. It's pretty rough. The offense wasn't really going quite yet, and the pitching was obviously pretty brutal in the early going, and they got off to a very bad start, which, you know, I talked to Jason Prill here about that. You know, we talked about how they might be a little bit rough in the early going because it's a young team and they want to win, but at the same time, there's a lot of things that have to go there, and development is one of them. But man, since that first weekend, hitting has not been an issue in Lynchburg. Obviously, Ralphie Velasquez, as we know, has 4 home runs. He's doing really well. He's got a total of 6 extra base hits in his first 11 games. I think 12 now. He's got a double. He had a double on Sunday. Stats aren't updated, but I think he had a double Sunday. So he's up to 7 extra base hits in 12 games. Could not ask for more from the 19-year-old. You want to gripe about anything? The strikeout rate, there's a bit of a concern there. It's early. I don't love the fact that he's running a double-digit strikeout and swinging strike rate this early at 19, but, you know, he's at low A, and he's just getting used to it, and he's hitting for power. So you have to really enjoy that for what it is and see how things develop. Maybe he can tone it down. You'd like to see him walk a little more. He's got 7, though. That's not that bad. So the guy that's doing the best, though, really, is 2 guys. It's Angel Hanau, who's doing really good, which isn't a surprise. You know, he's 20 years old, and this is technically his 3rd stint in low A. He played there at the end of 2022, and then he played there last year, had some surgery. Then he came back this year for his, it's not really his 3rd stint. It's kind of his 3rd stint, but it's his second, start of his 2nd year. Last year was his first full year there, and he's looked really comfortable. Now, it's 12 singles and 6 extra base hits, which isn't bad. So, you know, a lot of singles. But the thing I'm looking at for him is the 10% strikeout rate, really low. The swinging strike rate is 9%. That is fantastic. He is doing a great job making contact. He does put the ball on the ground a lot, 50%. So that, you know, I don't know if Angel Hanau is ever going to hit for a lot of power, truthfully. I mean, he's got some pop in the bat. He's a very aggressive swinger. He takes a hard hack. I don't know how much power he'll develop. He's not a huge frame kid. We'll see. But I think if anybody needs promoted early in the season, because I know people want to talk about, well, when is Ralphie going to go to Lake County? And when is Jason Churio going to go to Lake County? And for me, Angel Hanau has to be the first guy to get to Lake County from Lynchburg because, as I stated, this is technically a part of his 3rd season there. He has now played there in parts of 3 seasons. He was there all last year. He's ready to go to the next level. The problem is you've got Alex Mooney, who we're going to hear from later in this podcast, and you've got Jose Devers, who is playing in Lake County. You've got Nate Furman, who needs to hit his way to Akron, which there could be at bats from Akron. We'll talk about upward mobility in a little bit. You've got Tyrese Turner, who I don't think should be a priority there. So if you have to sacrifice some of his at bats for somebody else, you should, because he's more of a utility guy. He's also 24. I would not, you know, really sit there and prioritize his at bats so much. But I think Furman would be the first to go up to Akron if he gets things moving a little bit, because at Akron, you know, you've got Bracho and Cairo, who I know some people are on the Bracho train. I don't think he's a prospect anymore. I just don't. He can hit the occasional home run. Everyone gets excited about that, but that's, you know, he's not going to be a major league player, in my opinion. And you got Watson moving all over in Akron. Frias plays all over. They're going to get at bats for Tolentino and Valdez and Frias. So you can open up at bats for somebody in Double A and move Hanau to High A sooner than later if we're talking about the first set of promotions. And I think it has to go to Hanau. I know everybody wants to see Ralphie get moved up. I do too, because Low A is, I hate, you know, no disrespect to any of the organizations down there, it's not their fault, but Low A is just not a very competitive level anymore. Ever since they've eliminated the short season ball, you've just got a lot of pitchers who can barely throw a second pitch for a strike. Sometimes they can't even throw their fastball for a strike. You know, you get your tugboats, Matt Wilkinson, who we'll talk about. You get some of those guys in that level. You get some Parker Messick down there, but really it's a lot of kids again who are playing for their first time in a full season league on their own outside of a complex. So it's not a league where you're going to see a ton of great pitching. So hitting, it's very hard to see translate there. So when you see it with guys like Ralphie and Hanau and Chorio are doing are great because they should be dominating this competition, right? You want to see them dominating this competition, because if you're not, there's a problem, which is why you see guys who aren't hitting and you're like, okay, well, this is not good if you're not hitting at this level. Those guys are, but you do need a better challenge when you hit like this. So I think the first set of at-bats to be opened up are for Angel Hanau at High A first. And then probably followed by Churio. Honestly, Churio's off to a great start as well. You know, he played part of a season there last year, and he's 19 now. Hanau and Churio, Hanau, I believe, is going to be 21 next month. Yeah, he's going to turn 20 in May. And Churio also going to turn 20 in May? Churio is going to turn 19 the same day. So those two actually have the same birthday, but they're a year apart. And Ralphie is also going to turn 19 May 28th. So all those guys next month are going to hit their full age for the level. So 20 and 19 and 19. But Hanau has to have the first at-bats of the next level. And then to me, it's Churio, actually, because in the outfield at Lake County, it's also pretty open. You have Justin Boyd, who unfortunately I don't think is a priority guy. Jorge Burgos is in his second year there. He can move up to Akron and kind of ride the bench. But, you know, the at-bats at outfield in Akron are hard to come by because you've got DeLauder has to play every day and Halpin has to play every day. And you've got Planez, who is going into his final minor league year before he hits free agency. And Watson's playing some outfield. Cairo's playing some outfield. So playing time there is a little bit more difficult in terms of the outfield. But I think you can easily rotate some of those guys through and, you know, move up a Burgos, or heck, even, I don't want to say cut Burgos, but, you know, maybe he's just not a priority anymore right now in Akron, because Jake Fox has to go to Akron too. Like, I know he's not for the greatest start in Lake County, but he's got to go up too, because he's repeating the level, and he was good enough last year to go up. A lot of this is playing time. I have to be honest. Like, I think a lot of people want to see these promotions, and it's a lot of playing time. And I know that, like I said, the at-bats in Lynchburg are not as competitive for a hitter, and they're not as competitive for a pitcher if you are a Matt Wilkinson or a Parker Messick last year. They're not as competitive. So you want to get those guys to environments and be priorities, but you also have to – the Guardians want them to lay a foundation for routines, get used to playing every day, get used to being on their own for the first time, and being responsible to do your work, show up to the ballpark, take care of yourself, put baseball first, all those sorts of things, right? That's the first time some of these guys in Lynchburg are doing this. So as we talked about with Jason Prill, with some of the quote-unquote veterans that are in Lynchburg teaching other guys how to do that. So they want to let those guys lay a foundation, which they used to kind of do in the complex leagues that first year when they got drafted, right? Because they could stash all their draft picks. Let's be honest right now. I think that if they didn't cut the amount of minor leaguers you could have in your system down to 165 from whatever it was earlier, 180 or unlimited, I don't know, whatever. Those guys would still be in Arizona. Okay, I think Ralphie would still be in Arizona right now if it wasn't for this new rule pushing him there. Maybe he'd start there, but I don't think it's 100% guaranteed. Maybe even Rafael Ramirez would have started there. I don't know, because this has always been a very conservative club. Alex Clemmie, same thing. I think he could have been in Arizona to start, but because they had to cut down on the amount of players you're allowed to have in the system, you got to fill those rosters up. You had to push those guys there because you had to fill a roster, and I don't know. So we'll see how that goes. But that's what they used to like to do these things, is lay that foundation for them to be good professionals. And now they have to do it at Lynchburg. So I don't really anticipate. I'll ask Rob Serfolio this week when I talk to him about moving guys along and what they want to see and how long they want to let guys kind of sit at a level and start to develop and just develop good habits and routines and stuff. But I don't think they're going to push these guys that fast. Again, I think now they recognize probably needs to go because he's 20 and he's repeating the level, and this is sort of his third year. Churio's still pretty young, so I think a second half thing for him is more likely. Same with Ralphie. I don't know. I mean, look, it would be even those two guys going from Lynchburg to Lake County in the second half would be more about their, I want to say almost normal, but normal-ish. Like, they have done that before. More so with pitching than hitting. They promoted guys from low A to high A in the second half. Pitching, you know, a lot of it sometimes is where you need guys to be. But a lot of this, again, is about reps and playing time, and they need reps. Ralphie needs pro reps. Rafael Ramirez needs pro reps. Jason Churio needs non-complex reps. Like, they all need reps. So you have to make sure they're playing. The first priority always for the Guardians, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, but I'm saying the first priority for them is, okay, how do we get these guys at bats 5 out of the 6 games a week? They're probably going to rest a day, right? So how do we get these guys playing time 5 days a week, and who do we prioritize them over? And obviously they have their priority guys. And I said, no offense to Tyrese Turner, no offense to Justin Boyd, no offense to Jorge Burgos, but a guy like Jason Churio probably has to be more of a priority there. They've already done this with Isaiah Green. He was a priority when he came in here from the Mets, when that trade for Lindor, and now he's on the developmental list. That's just how it goes. He had chances, and they have other guys they have to do it for, and this is how things shift year over year. And now in Akron, they've got DeLauder and Halpin, and then they mix in Lampe, and they mix in Planez, and they're moving around Watson. So I think infield has more of a chance in Lynchburg and Lake County first for Hanau. But the first priority is these guys getting reps. So anybody saying like May, like the birthdays for these guys, which is May 19th to May 28th for Ralphie, I think is premature. I think it's going to be, if Ralphie gets to Lake County in the second half, I think that's a good thing. That would be more in track with what the Guardians do, and that would still be kind of aggressive. But we'll also see how they've changed with this new rule, and that's why I intend to ask Rob Serfolio this week. So my order, though, I think of when they're going to be promoted, and now comes first. I think Churio comes second. I know we have said online about CJ Cephas hitting well at Lake County, and there's at-bats at first base in Akron, which there absolutely are. They have Joe Naranjo, who is 22, and he just hasn't hit in his career at all at this point. Aaron Baracho plays him first. They have Dian Frias playing first base some days up there, so you want to know what? They do need another first baseman up there, because Dian Frias shouldn't be first playing first base. That's a total waste. It's nice to add to his tool belt, but it's a waste of time, honestly. So I think that you could see CJ go up there in the second half, and that makes room for Ralphie. So, and based on Cephas's college experience too, playing at Miami, a half season of low A should be enough. So, but given where the Guardians are track record wise with how they promoted these guys, that would still be slightly on the aggressive side for them and more normal, I would say. So not going to be rushed. I know everyone, I think moving Ralphie from Lynchburg to Lake County in year one of his pro career is fast tracking. I do. I just don't think it's going to be as fast as everyone wants. Everyone wants to jump the gun. It's April 21st. And Ralphie hasn't even played the entire league yet. I don't think Churio has from his time last year. None of those guys have played against the same team twice. They don't have the same scouting reports on them. Let's let these guys get through playing the same team 2 times in a season. Let the scouting reports get out there. Let's see how pitchers adjust. I know the pitching in that level, again, isn't very good, So hopefully he keeps dominating, because that will show that he can deserve, he can handle another level and he's ready. I'm not questioning whether he is or not. I think he'd be just fine personally, but you want to let these guys face the same guys a couple times and see if they need, you need them to have the league adjust to them, and they need to be able to adjust back. So I think let's see them play Salem a second time or Fredericksburg, whoever, and let's see what the scouting report says. Let's see if they get attacked differently. Let's see them adjust, see them struggle. You don't want to promote them before they know what they can handle. But again, I still think second half for all those guys, at least Churio and Velasquez, would be aggressive if they were there in the second half. Now, I think sooner than later for him, given his situation. All right, Matt Wilkinson, we got to talk about him. That man is just on another level. He should be on another level. We're talking about guys who should be at another level. It's Matt Wilkinson, 14 and two thirds innings so far. And it's been great. 26 strikeouts, 5 walks, 6 hits. He is very hard to hit. A lot of it's because of his pitch mix and his location. I do think that there should be innings for him at Lake County, frankly, because right now your rotation is Denholm. You've got Messick and Miller and Spivey and Peterson. Spivey's struggling as a starter. Peterson's fine. Miller and Hajar have been tandeming, and Hajar just can't throw strikes and go very long, so he needs to go to the bullpen. And then I think that once Messick gets to Akron, it makes a lot of sense for Wilkinson to go up. I know Yorvan Gomez might be the guy to go because he was in Lynchburg a year ago. So maybe it's Yorman Gomez first, but I think it's got to be Matt Wilkinson. They're the same age, and I think Wilkinson's probably the better pitcher right now. I would put him at Akron, at Lake County, when Mark Messick goes to Akron, which he needs to be there soon. I didn't really put a – I'm not sure why. Like, I heard the other day that Ethan Hankins is going to be back pretty soon, so maybe they're leaving a rotation spot open. But right now, your rotation in Akron is Jaime Arias, Rodney Boone, Aaron Davenport, Tommy Mason, Ryan Webb. You don't need to start Jaime Arias. He is 25. He is an org guy who just goes wherever they need innings to cover. And when Hankins comes back, you have that and him to go in that spot. You can still tandem start Boone and Hankins, and you can get a spot up there for Messick. So there's innings for him in Akron. And then I think you can move Wilkinson to Lake County. Halpin, Petey Halpin off to a great start. I'm not sure what changed for him. You know, last year he came into the season with kind of a new swing and a new stance, I should say. Not really a new swing so much, but a new loading setup, as it were. And he's done this 3 times already in his career. It's happened a lot. But this year he looks a little bit different once again. But 13 strikeouts in 12 games, so a little bit much there. In terms of strikeout rate, it's 22%, but better walk rate. He's just hitting the ball a little bit better, and I think he's also getting the ball in the air more, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, he's got a 35% fly ball rate as opposed to a 27% ground ball rate. Not really pulling the ball a ton, but doing a lot of different things nicely, and he's off to the best start. I mean, Chase DeLauder is walking some. That's great. He's not striking out. It's a lot of ground balls for Chase DeLauder. I didn't mean to get into Chase DeLauder talk. The things I was concerned about with Chase DeLauder coming into the year were his swing forcing him to be cut off at the end, which everyone's worried about, and it leads to him to pull a lot of ground balls on the ball, on the ground, because he doesn't fully get around on some of the stuff, and that's what he's done so far. It's been a lot of pulled ground balls. Not great for Chase DeLauder. He needs to get the ball in the air more, and that's kind of thing I was worried about. But Petey Halpin not having any issues with that so far. Really impressed with him. I don't know what the probability of him getting to Columbus is at this point. I mean, you have Citrola. You don't need to prioritize him over Petey Halpin. Certainly probably shouldn't prioritize Miles Straw over anybody, but I don't think they're going to quite go that far at this point. And you're going to get George Valera back maybe sometime in the month of May, which would be great. So I don't know, but glad to see Petey Halpin off to a good start, because it's a big year for him. He has got to be on the 40-man roster at the end of the season. Ryan Webb, watched 2 of his starts this week. He started on Tuesday and Sunday. Fantastic stuff from Ryan Webb. He did have some issues with the control on Sunday. He walked a couple more, 4 batters. He didn't make it out of the 5th inning. But I heard he was about 91, 93 on the radar gun in Akron on Sunday. And he's missing a lot of bats. The changeup looks really good. The curveball is looking good. He's using the slider. He's just got to, you know, work on that command. The command's been better this year. That start on Sunday was really his first, only the third start of the year. It's only the first time he's had control issues. So He's missing bats. I really think that Ryan Webb is going to be an option for the Guardians by the end of the year. I do. I think he's got to be on the 40 by the end of the year. And based on how Cleveland has operated in the last couple of years, they tend to get some guys some 40-man experience or major league experience the year that they have to be on the 40 late in the year. Now, obviously, you'd like to see him doing this at Akron, but given the – or at Columbus, I should say. But given that Columbus is really hurting for pitching right now, wouldn't shock me if he is one of the first pitchers up from Akron to Columbus at some point this year, because I just think the stuff is there, the age. That's a guy they have to worry about being aggressive with because of the age and the time missed of the Tommy John and coming back and all that. I think he is the first guy to get some innings at the AAA once he gets his footing under him for the year in Akron. So looking out for him. And as I said, I think Ethan Hankins is due back either this week or next week, I want to say. So if he's not back in the rotation this coming week for Akron, it should be the next week. So things seem to be okay with him. I'm not as sure on Doug Mukasey. It seems like he's not too bummed. So I'm hoping that he's going to be just fine, but we'll see. And then Andrew Walters, my goodness. This is going to depend a little bit on what is happening in Columbus in terms of depth, right? Because you have Alomon up there and you have Nick Enright, who is kicking butt. I'm not talking, you know, Nick Enright needs to be get a major league shot. Tanner Burns is up there. He's okay. Ghost has been okay. You probably could move on from Randy LaBau or John Dokaxis or Anthony Bonda, one of those guys. They're all there for depth. So innings shouldn't be an issue. I think you just get Walters up there sooner than later. I think Walters is going to be in Cleveland by the end of the year. I really do, especially given the way the injuries have been at the major league level and just across baseball. And if they're going to stay in contention, they're hot. You want more bullpen reinforcements, I think it's the way to go. In Lake County, I saw them for the first time on Friday in person, I should say. And it's the 2023 draft pick show there. Honestly, you've got Cooper Engle, who's hitting the ball great. He hit the ball. He hit a home run on Sunday. He's been dealing with a bit of a sore right shoulder. So I watched him on Friday, and he was not committing his front shoulder at all on his swings. It was a very handsy swing. Like, he was getting his hands out in front before anything else because you could just tell the right shoulder was bothering him. All of his throws were kind of from like a three-quarter sidearm angle because something wasn't right. But he still managed a home run on Sunday despite that. So good for him. Hope he's okay. It's just a temporary thing for him. But he is still hitting the ball great. I love the approach at that level. That's another guy I would love to see get at bats in Akron because Cody Huff is their starter and Mikael Ramirez is backing him up there with a catcher rotation, even though one of those guys isn't really going to DH much up there. I would still like to see him get some time in Double A this year. Hope you just heard a frost advisory was issued for my location in Ohio as that update came over my computer. Thanks for that. Everybody can hear that, I hope. Don't know why that was an important time to play. Anyway, so Cooper Engle off to a really good start in Lake County. Again, I think he is prepared for another level just because of where he played in the ACC and his approach overall. Just, I feel really good about it. But he should find at-bats in Akron sooner than later, given his age as well. CJ Kafis, as we talked about, off to a really good start offensively. I believe a little bit less in his start, though, because he is hitting a lot of fly balls. He's not pulling them a lot. He does have two homers. I would like to see him, though. He's not striking out, but which he never did in college. He's barely walking. I'd like to see him get some more footing, too, as well in the pros. I want to see him put the ball in the air to his pull side a little more. I know he had I think he hit an opposite field home run this week, which is actually really great for him. I think there's more pop in that bat than people think. He might still end up being a light hitting first baseman. He did play left field on Sunday for the first time, which I didn't see what he did, but hopefully it was good. But I would like to see him hit the ball in the air to the pull side a little bit more. We'll see if they can work on that with him. But at bats for those guys, the next level should open up at some point, even though you've got Cody Huff there who might be a priority because of his defense. And then obviously Alex Mooney, who we're going to hear from at the end of the podcast, off to a really good start. Now, he is swinging and missing quite a bit. I will say the strikeout rate is high. It's early. I'm hoping this isn't a big deal for him. He did not strike out a lot in college. He's not walking, but man, he's hitting everything in sight. And I really like the confidence of this kid. So we'll see what they'd want to do with him. And then Messick, we talked a little bit about Parker Messick. When should he move up? I think any day now. Honestly, I don't know why he's still in Lake County. I saw him pitch again on Friday. It's the same stuff. He can throw the slider and the changeup in any count. He is up to 94 at the fastball. It's like 89, 93, top out of 94. It's deceptive enough to get by hitters because of his delivery and the flat approach angle on it. So it's not like it's not a slow 89. It can get on hitters a little faster, and he has decent command. So all that plays up. And then again, the fastball, the changeup and the slider, he can throw in any count, and he has control of those pitches to throw them for strikes. I'd like to see what he can do against double A hitters sooner than later. Columbus, the pitching is a bleep show. It's awful. Curry's down there for depth right now for Cleveland. He gave up 5 runs on Sunday, but you know, we know who Curry is. He's a solid back end starter / reliever. And right now they need him as depth in AAA, but the rest of it's a mess. Well, Dion's off to a rough start, unfortunately. Hunter Stanley, I don't really know much at this point what's going to happen with him. Then you've got Connor Gillespie and Adam Oller, who both had 10 strikeout performances this year, but their depth, Oller's 29. And really, Alomon's been great. And I shouldn't say great. Alomon has been good. He's missing some bats again, which is good. I do have concerns about the command overall. I think it's a lot of people over the offseason, I noticed online, were like, oh, trade Class A because you have Franco Alomon and he's great. Franco Alomon is a good relief prospect, and I'm excited about him. But the reason that you can't sit there and say you should trade a guy like Emmanuel Class A because of Franco Alomon. Now, Andrew Walters is a different story here, but Alomon doesn't have great control. He really is kind of a one or two pitch pitcher. And even it's more of a one pitch. He doesn't throw the slider a whole lot. And it's a four seam and a sinker. And they're similar velocities, but he gets away with it because I saw this from a guy online. I'm going to butcher the name, but Ben Porat, I think, from Baseball America contributor, talked about how his induced vertical break and his sinker, they kind of play off each other pretty well. He tunnels them. They look similar. And it's a low release point. So even though they're not great pitches individually, they play off each other very well. But so he's really just a fastball pitcher. And he's got 2 hit batters. He's got 4 walks in 8 innings. And it's early, so he could just be working off some rust. He does have 13 strikeouts. He can miss bats, but I think he is more of a 7th inning guy more than he is a closer. But he's been solid so far. Nick Enright, I don't know how many more times I can say this. Nick Enright needs to be he needs to be on the 40-man roster. I think he is ready for a shot. I don't see why he is not on the 40-man roster. They have, you know, Pedro Avila and Peter Shilzlecki, and who else am I missing here? The other guy they've been going up and down about, Wes Parsons. Those guys are fine. They're okay. They're depth. But Nick Enright can do the same things, and you can shuffle him up and down 5 times this year, and the guy misses bats. 19 strikeouts in 9 innings, 4 hits, 1 walk, no runs. The fastball plays. He has command. The slider plays. The curveball plays. I don't know what it's going to take to get this guy a shot. Cal Manzardo, 3 home runs over the weekend. He is hitting the ball really well. Again, I think he is 3rd on the team, 4th on the team in WOBA, 5th on the team in WOBA. Jeez, they got a lot of hitters. Daniel Schneeman is up there in WOBA. Mike Capriese is hitting the ball pretty well. Brian Lavastida, good for Brian Lavastida. He's hitting the ball well as too. Jonathan Rodriguez is hitting the ball really well. I don't know how much longer it'll be until they give him a shot, but he's hitting the ball well in Columbus, although he is striking out a ton as well. And I think his batted ball data is very goofy in terms of fly ball to ground ball, right? Yeah, he's hitting a lot of ground balls right now. So it's very weird about Rodriguez. I don't know if what he's doing is sustainable right now. So maybe I'd hold off on Rodriguez at the moment, but I don't know when Manzardo's time is going to come. We're past the control date, so they get a 7th year of control out of him at this point. Super 2, I don't know. That's to be determined. It depends on what other prospects are called up. Super 2 date is never a hard date because of the of when other prospects are called up. It's the top 22% of the rookies that are called up in terms of playing time. So it depends on when other guys are called up, and there's been a couple, so we're definitely not close to Super 2 date. It's usually sometime in June or July. Usually it's June, so we're not anywhere close to that. If they're going to Super 2 them, then it's going to be a while. We'll see. Too soon right now, but it's only been 17, 18 games for them in AAA. It's only been 21 for Cleveland, I would say Memorial Day at earliest for Manzardo. And then we'll end before we get to the interview with Alex Mooney, the 1-1 update. I, you know, at next year in Cleveland.substack.com, we keep doing the weekly our rankings for the one pick, where we think the Guardians will go. And I was Nick Kurtz early in the year, and then I've been Travis Bezanna, and I think I'm still Travis Bezanna. But here's the thing. It doesn't really matter who it is in the end, because I think we've narrowed it down. I think it's pretty likely to be Condon, Bezanna, Montgomery, and then I'm thinking it's not going to be Kurtz. I don't know. I just think it's unlikely. I think it's probably those three at this point. We'll see. But no matter who they pick, those are all good picks. And we've talked to this about this a million times on Lockdown Guardians, is that Hanenis doesn't matter at all. It doesn't. They're going to take the best bat no matter what, because that hitter who they're taking 1-1 overall, they expect to be able to hit lefties or righties no matter what side of the ball, the plate they hit from, right? So handedness is not going to matter. You are taking the highest upside, the best player you think in the draft that is going to hit their upside and is also going to sign for an underslot deal. And I know people are going to say, oh, Dolan's cheap, underslot, blah, blah, blah. As we talked about at Lockdown Guardians, every team does this. Everybody pretty much goes under slot at the first overall pick. It's very rare that a team goes full slot. I know Spencer Torkelson did this Detroit in 2020. 2020 was a weird year. Some teams do go full slot, but because Cleveland has so much money to play with and they can use it down the board, they always like to do, every team does this, and it's not about money. They always spend all their draft capital. They go into a penalty every year. They got to pay a fine almost every year, except for 2020, because of how much money they spend in the draft. They spend to the point where they don't lose a draft pick, but they have to pay a fine. So spending money is not an issue for the Guardians in the draft. That's where they do spend the allotted money they are allowed to spend. They do go up and beyond that. So don't sit there and take, underslot deal at 1-1 as a cheap thing. It's not. But it'll depend on who between Condon, Bezanna, and Montgomery will give them at 1-1. And maybe Kurtz. I don't know. Maybe. It depends on what they'll give them at 1-1. But they're going to take, if everything is equal between four of them or three of them or two of them, and they just take the guy that takes the less money so they can spend it later in the draft, they will do it. But no matter what, I think all those guys are going to be really good hitters. I really do. They're going to be special players. This is a very good top of the class. It is a top heavy class, as we've talked about on Lockdown Guardians. It is not a good class, 15 or 10 to 30, right? It's not great there. And then it's okay in the back half. But the Guardians are going to get a good player no matter what. You don't have to worry about, oh, they went cheap or they, whatever. These guys are special players. They truly are. Would they have gone over Skeens, Cruz, Langford? Probably not. No, that's a special year. All those guys are 1-1 talents. And I think any of these guys would be fourth right after all three of them last year. So they're still good players. They're still really good players. And again, handedness doesn't matter because you're taking a guy you think can hit from both sides of the plate. So Montgomery, maybe that favors him a little bit. We'll see. But, if someone says, oh, the Dolans, they won't spend, you can gripe about this team a lot of ways in terms of money. You can, but the draft is not one of them. All right. Thanks for listening this week. We're going to end this with an interview with Alex Mooney. Hopefully next week I'll have a broadcaster on from one of the affiliates. Maybe it'll be Marco Lanave from Akron. We'll see about Columbus, if I can get Matt on here again, or maybe I'll talk to Mike Mahoney from Lake County. I know he's not their broadcaster, but he and I had a good conversation last year, and he's a lot of fun to talk to in the press box and just in general. So maybe we'll have him for some Lake County observations. But until then, thank you for listening. Go subscribe to the newsletter at nextyearincleveland.substack.com. Please share this with a friend if you want them to learn more about the MLB draft and the Guardians minor league system. If you think they would enjoy this, please share with a friend. And thank you for following. Thank you for supporting. I really appreciate it. Here is that interview with Alex Mooney. And look to nextyearincleveland.substack.com for more with Alex Mooney and also for more with Rob Serfolio from the Guardians this coming week. Thank you.
Fun. Just playing my game, it's got me here, so continue to play my game, play with heart, 100% every time I'm out there, and just try to win some games. It can get kind of, tiring out here when you're playing 120 games, you're playing the same team 6 days a week, but, winning, I've always just hated losing, so try to win games, have fun in the clubhouse, and make baseball enjoyable.
Yeah, I've heard you're a competitive guy. You like to win. Everyone talks about, your leadership and stuff.
Yes, sir.
Development is at the minor league level. You want to become a major leaguer. Everybody here wants to get to the majors. But how important is it, do you think, for you guys to develop a sense of what it takes to win, come to the ballpark every day, and not just worry about, you know, how am I developing to become a major leaguer, but yeah. how do we become a winning team and have that mindset?
100%. And, you know, for me personally, like, I don't want to think about the major leagues all the time. I think you just, you know, take it one day at a time, one pitch at a time. Like, what am I going to do next at bat? What am I going to do at the field? What time am I getting in the field tomorrow? Just that type of stuff. And, you know, if you do your part, do your job, then everything will play itself out. So, you know, my coaches in the past always just said, control what you can control. That's my play and what kind of teammate I am in the clubhouse and how I play every day on the field.
We can go back to your swing change for a second. Just to get the ball in the air more, hit the ball harder, what exactly were you looking for?
It was more to get my body moving towards the middle of the field a little more. Nothing really like launch angle-wise or anything like that, but just get more power into the ball and use my body a little bit better and get balls to the middle of the field a little bit better. And so it was a long process, to say the least, and stressful at times, but obviously a great player development, so trust in those guys and just continue to stay in my process.
Working well so far, it's got to feel good that the changes are taking effect early in the season when it's hard to hit too.
100%. You know, like I said, I don't want to really think about it too much or my play too much. Just kind of go out there and do what I've done my whole life and try to be the best teammate I can be for these guys.
What did you take away from your college experience? Because obviously you had a lot of draft interest in high school and people thought maybe, well, it might be unsignable. You really seemed like Duke was a really big pull for you. So what did you learn from college, and was obviously that was a good decision for you?
Yeah, I love Duke. I couldn't have asked to go anywhere better. All the coaches over there, Coach Pollard, they've always had my back from the day I stepped on campus. And so obviously education was always a big part for me, so to go to a school like Duke was huge. And hopefully finish my degree at some point, get that out of the way. But like I said, it was awesome. Couldn't have asked to go anywhere else. And 2 years that I was there were the best 2 years of my life.
Your dad played in Michigan, though, and you're from Michigan. Was there? Did they give you an offer? Was there any pull to play there?
Yeah, for sure. I heavily considered it. Obviously, we're outside right now. It's not too warm.
You're used to it, yeah.
you know, that was big for me, but also, you know, I kind of want to do my own thing. And play baseball in the ECC was huge for me, so that was really what it came down to.
And you also played in the Cape. Can you just talk about what your experience was there? And why do you think teams are so, especially the Guardians, they're so interested in what guys do in the Cape, it seems like. What do you think that is? Why
yeah,
that
I think
is?
The Cape's huge. For me, I really enjoyed it to meet new guys, live with different guys from different colleges. Live with different guys from different schools and meet them, and then it's cool as you go on through the college season, and then obviously pro ball, you see guys that you played with and stuff like that, so it's super fun. But I think it's really important because you're playing 5-6 days a week, which is just like minor league ball, and you know, a lot of guys, it takes a tear on their body, and so they kind of see who can handle it physically, but also mentally. I mean, if you go on a bad stretch, and you can't really let things snowball. You can't get too high, too low, and so I think that's a huge part of it. And then obviously it's top competition. You're playing with your bats and stuff like that. So, I mean, I love the Cape. Obviously, it's super important for your development. It's very similar to football.
What are we going to do about getting some of these deep players in this year's draft? I think Santucci probably is going to fall out of their range, but got Andrew Helio there. Are you talking to Mike? You talking to anybody about getting one of the pitchers over here?
Yeah, me and Mike, we've had some conversations. Obviously, they got a really good team this year, and those guys are killing it. So happy to see that. But, I mean, the draft guys from Duke, they're good ball players, but they're also good dudes. So I think that's super big important part of it.